Chapter 19. Caitha watched Brunt hit Gorm like a runaway carriage. The mercenaries below laughed and hooted as the dwarf flew through the air, tumbling head over feet. The heroes collectively winced as he slammed into the wall of a burned-out factory with an unpleasant crunching noise. Their spirits sank as the warrior slid down the wall, a cloud of ash billowing from the flaming ruins where he landed. Mr. Flynn turned back to the cheering silver talons, his face locked in a determined sneer as he clutched the stub of his hand. "One down, as they say. Right, Mr. Brunt?" Then they heard the laughter, a rib-rattling cackle that echoed from the depths of the grave. All eyes turned to the ruins where Gorm had landed. A figure was emerging from the ash and flames, a dwarf-shaped apparition that barely resembled the warrior Caitha knew. He seemed a demon wrought from soot and sweat, his beard glowing blood red in the firelight, his eyes like burning coals. With every step, he banged his axe on his shield, a slow and purposeful rhythm beneath the horrible laughter. Several of the silver talons backed away from the advancing dwarf. Mr. Flynn took a cautious step behind Mr. Brunt, although the ogre seemed just as unsettled. Even the flames around the warrior writhed and parted as he walked, as if trying to get out of his way. "What's happening right now?" asked Heraldin. Caitha knew. The handful of berserkers she had encountered throughout her career were impressive and terrifying all at once, and they'd never achieved anywhere near the level of renown that Gorm Ingerson had once commanded.
"Pyrebeard,"
Caitha whispered. He ran toward the ogre now, his axe hammering on his shield with every step, a bestial roar in his throat. Brunt responded with a bellow of his own and lumbered forward.
"This is madness," said Jin.
"Yes," agreed Caitha as the combatants met.
"Brunt should have run."
Gorm was a whirlwind with a manic grin, ducking and weaving and striking around the bellowing ogre. Caitha couldn't actually see the dwarf moving, but Brunt jerked and shuddered like a broken marionette under the onslaught. He staggered from an axe blow to the shoulder, reeled from a shield bash to the nose, doubled over at a strike to the kidneys, and was knocked back by a steel-toed boot to the face. The assembled mercenaries fell silent when Gorm finally landed, still howling like a madman. A moment later, Brunt toppled into the dust behind him.
"That was unexpected," said Jin.
"Flynn seems to have predicted it well enough," said Heraldin. "Look." Geist pointed. Caitha saw the gnome pressing through the lines of silver talons, headed for the city gates. A moment later, Gorm hit the ranks of mercenaries like a cannonball, sending men and their dismembered components scattering into the air. The impact signaled the start of a race. Flynn pushed through the panicked crowd of soldiers, and Gorm carved a path in hot pursuit.
"He's winning a brawl with an army," said Laruna.
"For now," said Jin, "but it's only a matter of time before the silver talons collect themselves, or he slips."
Caitha sent an arrow out the window and into the throat of a silver talon.
"Well then," she said with a determined grin, "let's go even the odds."
It was as smooth and professional an operation as Caitha had ever participated in. A sudden eruption of sorcerous flame blew the trapdoor off the tower and onto the unfortunate soldiers below. The heroes rolled down the steps and across the courtyard. Laruna dispersed crowds of mercenaries with great spouts of flame. Caitha and Jin covered her flanks, sending arrows or blasts of magic to put down any resistance the silver talons mustered. Heraldin and Geist ran around the group, striking at groups of archers as they attempted to rally. They scythed through the crowd of soldiers with mechanical precision, like a gnomish harvest engine through a field of wheat. The problem with mercenaries, from an employer's perspective anyway, is that while it is relatively easy to find a man who will fight for money, it's much less common to find those willing to die for a paycheck. Seeing Brunt fall diminished the resolve of the soldiers. Getting caught between five heroes and a dwarf-shaped ball of rage and death demolished it. The rank and file began to evaporate. A few self-preserving individuals broke away from the rear of the battalion, and the formations nearest the heroes began to fall apart as mercenaries scrambled to avoid them. Soon, almost the entire army was running for one gate or another. There were still pockets of resistance amid the chaos. A squad of dagger-wielding assassins rushed to attack the hero's rear, but stopped short when their leader began to bubble and smoke. The man twitched and shrieked as his skin burned away, his body shriveled and black beneath it.
"Do you have to kill them so messily?" Caitha said, making a face.
Noctomancy is effective, not aesthetic, said Jin, deftly weaving a death spell around the mercenary. Besides, I think fear is a more efficient way to win the day.
He nodded to the rest of the squad, who were backing away from the withered husk of their squad leader.
Fair enough, said Caitha, dropping another assassin with an arrow to the eye. The rest of the squad turned and fled.
Magic shield, said Laruna.
Ahead of them, a group of mages had conjured a sorcerous barrier, shimmering in the hazy air, and ranks of archers were gathering behind it. The archers wound their crossbows, took aim at the advancing heroes, and shrieked in dismay as several clouds of greenish smoke engulfed the squad of mercenaries.
"The Bannerman's Gambit!" Haraldin called, bounding into the cloud from the mage's right flank as Geist sprang into the opposite side of the cloud. Caitha couldn't see into the noxious cloud, but if the screams and cringe-inducing crunches that emanated from it were any indication, the Bannerman's Gambit was decidedly unpleasant. The bard and weapons master bounded back into view a moment later.
"Let's choose another route," said Haraldin, directing them down a different street. "When that smoke clears, it's not going to be pretty in there. Even Geist wouldn't want to see it."
Geist nodded.
As they fought, they caught only glimpses of Gorm, a murderous, screaming phantom amid the destruction. Caitha saw him burst through the wall of a charred hut to pounce on a terrified mage. Haraldin pointed out the dwarf chasing a pack of mercenaries atop the roof of one of the ruined factories. Gorm caught them as they all went over the edge. Jin swore he saw the berserker riding on the shoulders of a fleeing Silver Talon, laughing and waving his axe as he went. Despite herself, Caitha was smiling as well. On the one hand, her career was officially dead, and the guild would prefer it if she was as well. On the other hand, the exhausting pursuit of success had ended. She'd caught it once, it got away, and now she was free. There would be no more loot, no ranks, no agents, no vying to get into the most prestigious parties or the biggest jobs. She felt like a new elf. On this side of the guild, being a ranger meant what it was always supposed to: self-sufficiency, defending the weak, and the pursuit of justice. There was a purity, a simplicity to the idea. It was like being in the garden in the Mirewood, or sitting with the king in the wood, as she imagined him anyway. She couldn't be sure if she was regaining some part of herself that she had lost, or finding the person she always wished to be, but it was what she had always yearned for.
"Perhaps I missed what I never had," she said.
"What?"
asked Laruna.
"Nothing," said Caitha, as she put an arrow through a charging mercenary's throat. It did sound a little mad when she said it aloud. Perhaps she was touched by the All-Mother after all. She didn't care if she was. Gerald Flynn, as a rule, never fled. He was not fleeing as he dashed northward, clutching the remnants of his ruined hand. He was making a tactical retreat, which stood in contrast to the common soldiers desperately running through the streets. Flynn had a plan and a destination, whereas the rabble making a mass exit around him had no goals beyond existing another hour or so. Flynn paid them no mind. Silver Talon deserters were dead to him, and they'd be dead to everyone else as well shortly after this business with the heroes was settled. The thrice cursed heroes. He could still hear the dwarf's roaring laughter echoing through the city. Johann predicted that Gorm Ingerson would lie down and die after the orcs were dead, just like he tried to drink himself to death after being shamed at the Dungeon of Azanon. The paladin's theory had held true, right up until Gorm gave Flynn a punch the gnome could still feel. Flynn shook off the thought. It was of no matter. There was a contingency in place, of course. There were always contingencies. That was the hallmark of good planning, after all. And the latest contingency was the greatest yet, a third battalion lying in wait just beyond the north gate. The heroes thought they had broken Flynn's forces, but when several hundred men marched into the chaos of Bloodroot, the element of surprise would belong to the Silver Talons again. The heroes who had ransacked Bloodroot came from the south and left south again, so the north gate was still closed and barred when Flynn reached it. It took considerable effort for the Tinderkin to lift the heavy bar, using his back to spare his mangled hand. He used his good arm and shoulder to push the door open, heaving with everything he had. When he finally stumbled through to the road beyond the gate, he stopped short. The road and field were empty. Nothing was in place. On second glance, parts of the army were in place. They were just in more places than they should have been, and decidedly sticky. Weapons had been dropped in the field.
Flynn stepped through the gate.
What the flaming...
A pile of stones shifted and then began to stand. Lichens grew into hair, rocks became hands and fingers, and a large boulder near the front became an unpleasant-looking face that curled into a snarl. The troll drew itself to its full height and stared at Flynn with undisguised hostility. The situation warranted a moment of reflection. Flynn had no army, no ogre, and crucially no more contingencies. He was unarmed, wounded, and face to face with one of the most deadly beasts on Arth, a specimen that appeared to have a predilection for killing silver talons, no less. As a rule, Gerald Flynn never fled. His tactical retreat back to Aberyth, however, was much more frantic than normal. When the crimson fog finally lifted, the world was dark and wet. A quick inventory told him that he still had all of his limbs and digits, his beard was intact, and miraculously, nothing felt worse for wear. He could have sworn he remembered cracking a rib. Gorm Ingerson was lying in a ditch, covered in sooty mud, staring into a smoke-filled sky that was suddenly eclipsed by a pair of beady red eyes and a set of long fangs.
"Hello, Thane," he said.
"I was wondering when you'd wake up,"
said the troll, taking a step back.
"I'd say a few more minutes yet."
Gorm winced as he laboriously pulled himself into a sitting position. His mouth tasted of soot and something metallic. Copper, perhaps.
"What happened?"
"We broke the army of the men in black armor," said Thane, "and chased the remnants from the city."
Gorm nodded. Scenes of the fight flitted before his eyes, flickers of memories cast in shades of crimson.
"I remember the battle, I think." "I would hope so. From what I could hear, you sounded very enthusiastic about it."
"I felled Brunt,"
said Gorm, clutching his head as he tried to remember.
"What happened to Flynn?"
"Who?"
"The gnomish snake that always stuck by that ogre's side."
Thane considered it.
"A little man with a topknot and a thin beard. I saw him flee."
"Ah, should have been the other way around if one of them had to live. I don't think Brunt was as bad as he was loyal. I'd be surprised if he was smart enough to understand what he was fighting for anyway. But Gerald Flynn helped orchestrate this whole thing. He's a big part of the reason Bloodroot and Tibrin..."
Gorm stopped himself. The thought of the Silver Talons' leader was enough to have him bawling his hands into a fist so tight it hurt. Much more talk of him, and the crimson mist would descend again.
"Where are the others?"
Gorm asked.
"They're searching the ruins for you."
"Oh? Then what are you doing here? Won't you be seen?"
"They're searching the other side of the city,"
said Thane, jabbing a thumb over his shoulder. There wasn't much Gorm could remember about the other heroes in the fight, although he had a vague recollection they'd watched him fall from a roof. Still, Gorm was a veteran of waking up in a strange place with a surplus of questions and a shortfall of memories. He wasn't even hungover this time.
"Right."
Getting to his feet took considerable effort.
"We'd best be making our way over there."
Thane lumbered alongside him.
"What happens now?"
he asked.
"Still figuring that out," said Gorm.
He mulled over his options as they walked through the city. Oddly enough, being marked for death by the Heroes Guild didn't trouble him. If anything, there was a comfortable familiarity about it. The Guild had wanted him tried and hanged well before he'd ever heard of this quest. The only difference now was that the Guild would be actively seeking his downfall, and that the feeling was mutual.
"So, did you fight the mercenaries?"
Gorm asked as they neared Bloodroot's central square.
"They had a force of many men hiding to the north," said the troll. "I ambushed them in their hiding spot."
"You took out a third battalion."
"I felled some of them. Most ran away when they saw me."
The troll smiled and shrugged.
"I have that effect on people."
"Some people. I find it's handy having a troll around. Thank you, Thane."
Thane's grin was like a motley set of daggers.
"I'd say our arrangement is working out rather well."
Gorm stopped in front of the cairn he'd built, now covered in ash and dust, and spattered with blood.
"There ain't no more arrangement," he said. "I'm dissolving it."
Panic flashed across the troll's face.
"But you said
your secret's safe. I won't tell anyone about you until you're ready, no matter how much I think you should step forward and be seen for what you are. And if you want to continue to fight alongside us, it's an honor and a great help. But I'll not have your aid because you're in my debt, or because I'm holding your secrets ransom."
He lifted the Heartseeker beads from Tibrin's grave.
and I'll not have you pretending to be my squire, or taking orders from me neither. I ain't better than nobody, and I'll not have you act like it."
Thane wore a small smile as he shook his head.
"Gorm, I never thought you acted like you would—"
"Never again!" shouted Gorm.
His eyes stung, and it wasn't just the ash in the air.
"I'll never again have a better man than I acting like it's the other way around, be they pink or green or brown or gray. You're not me squire, me debtor, or me victim. You're me friend, and that's the only arrangement we'll ever have from here on out. Understand?"
The troll replied with a burly hug that crushed the air from Gorm's lungs. Dwinpoldo placed his platinum pen in its small mahogany case. He snapped the lid shut and read the message engraved upon the top in bright golden letters. "Dwinpoldo, 100 years of fine service, Goldson Bags." With a sigh, he placed it atop his other belongings in the box. Then he squared away his blotter, refilled the inkwell for his successor, and carried his box down the steps from his high desk. The other employees avoided contact with Poldo in the hallway. Avoiding eye contact with a Scribkin is easy for most, as simple as not looking down. His old staff gave him apologetic nods as he passed through the room, but nobody actually dared to say goodbye. Poldo couldn't blame them. It was best not to be any more associated with someone on the way out than you needed to be. Laughter rang out from the executive lounge. Through the steel and glass doors, Poldo could see Mr. Goldson and Mr. Bags having a drink with Grandmaster Weaver Ortson of the Heroes Guild and Johan the Mighty. They toasted each other in celebration and laughed raucously at each other's jokes. Poldo was staring when Johan the Mighty noticed and gave him a wink. Mr. Goldson noticed and gave Poldo a glare that sent the Scribkin scurrying on his way. He clutched his box to his chest as he waited for the lift in the lobby. The smooth black doors opened, revealing an elf in a scarlet and gold uniform. Poldo sighed as the lift began to descend. He'd never thought he'd miss a gnoll, but he had quite liked Herc. The old lift attendant had been loyal, easy to please, and didn't shed much. But on the day that Poldo was given notice, Herc had told Poldo, in a nervous whisper, that rumors were spreading among the Shadowkin, rumors that the orcs of Bloodroot had been framed, that no papers could really be trusted anymore. The gnoll quit and went missing before word that the Bloodroot quest was complete even reached the top offices. Poldo could only assume the gnoll had taken his family and fled, as had most of the NPCs Poldo knew. The lobby, all smooth steel and black marble, bustled with activity. Shouts of traders and plunder fund managers washed over Poldo as he stepped out the doors of Goldson Bags. Poldo held his box tightly, gaping at the spectacle. Up and down the wall, everyone was in a frenzy of buying and selling. The exodus of NPCs had turned an entire class of citizens into a commodity. Wherever the fleeing Shadowkin were found holed up could be declared a new dungeon, a new quest, a new cache of loot for the Heroes Guild to harvest. As the sun set on the NPC program, a golden age of professional heroics was dawning. It was a whole new world. A terrible new world. The bead pivoted in Gorm's palm, reorienting its tapered end to point north by northwest. He closed his fist around it and looked toward the northern pine forests, black against the late afternoon sky. The sun would set soon.
"They're in the pine fells," he said. "They've started to head west."
Caitha followed his gaze.
"Are we going to follow them?"
"If ye was an orc of Bloodroot and we came knocking on your doorstep, what would ye do?"
"I'd have our heads on pikes," said Laruna.
"Aye. Far as they can see, we're probably the worst professional heroes of the lot."
"So what will we do?" asked Jin.
"We're alone out here, with limited gear and no healing potions," said Caitha.
"Yes, we know the healing potions went missing," said Heraldin.
"Well, it's important," snapped the elf.
"We'll reach out to other Shadowkin, make our case to them," said Gorm. "Gather evidence against the guild, whatever we can to convince the Guzvarda that we aren't who they think we are. Then we'll find them."
"I don't know about you," said Heraldin, "but I'm hearing a lot of we here. Some of us might prefer to return to Andoran and straighten this out with the guild."
"Don't be daft. The guild's way of straightening this out would be to put a sword through you and dump your corpse in the river," said Jin.
"Ah, good point," said the bard. Then we could petition King Handor for a pardon.
The same king who set us up on this phony quest? Said Caitha. Do you think an army of Silver Talons killed poor Niln and tried to do the same to us without Handor's blessing?
Well, then we could seek sanctuary at a temple.
Araldon was starting to sound desperate.
What temple will shelter you from the champion of Tandos? Asked Laruna.
Johann the Mighty had his hand in the scheme.
But...
Araldon looked around for some hope of escape, some alternate path. A heavy hand fell on his shoulder, and he looked up to see the weapons master. Geist shook his head.
You're right, my friend, sighed Araldon. I'm sorry.
Look around you,
Gorm told the other adventurers.
We're all we've got, so we stick together. There's no guild, no kingdom, no temple for us. This is as much home as you'll have until this ends, one way or another, because as far as Andoren is concerned, we're foes, villains, outlaws.
A criminal after all, sighed Araldon. Benny Hookhand will be wearing my skin for this.
I'd say you've got bigger problems than Benny Hookhand, said Jin.
Then I'd say you've clearly never crossed paths with Benny Hookhand.
The sun is setting, said Laruna.
Gorm nodded. It's time.
The heroes gathered around a small triangle made from three pine branches set atop a stone cairn, just outside the gates of Bloodroot. The memorial was covered in small tokens. Falcon feathers were holy to Almatra, but as no falcons could be found, a few hawk feathers had to suffice. Caitha had contributed one of her arrows. The mages had each dropped off arcane-looking gems, and Araldon and Geist had found some torn silks to hang from the triangle's peak. Gorm had found a silver and gold icon of a glow moth amid the charred rubble, an emblem of Fulgen, the silent god. Why the orcs had an icon of the dwarven god of light remained a mystery. Still, a holy symbol was a holy symbol, and it seemed appropriate that a high scribe's memorial would have some sacred object or another. Besides, Fulgen was said to be a friend to anyone in need. Perhaps the light in the darkness would guide Niln's spirit wherever it was meant to go. Araldon sang. Caitha blessed the high scribe's spirit. The mages conjured globes of light to dance over the ceremony. Geist put his hand upon the memorial, eyes closed, reverent. Tears were shed, and memories shared.
"You were the least hero among us, and yet you were the best of us," Gorm told Niln's memorial. "And you accomplished something. You mattered, and not just to those of us that loved you. You changed our world, Niln, and we're going to change everybody else's for you."
Then the heroes said their goodbyes and headed off. Gorm lingered for a moment.
"And I'll read your books,"
he whispered to Niln, patting the satchel that held Niln's scriptures and notes.
"Not because I believe in the Dark Prince or the Seventh Hero or any of that nonsense, but just because I'm your friend, and I need to believe you still know that somehow."
"Come on, Gorm," shouted Laruna.
"Aye!"
He hurried after them and caught up at the first bend in the road.
"It's going to feel strange," Caitha said, "not being heroes anymore."
"What are you talking about? I'm still a hero," said Gorm.
"Not as far as the Heroes Guild is concerned," said Jin.
"Burn the guild. Everybody's hero is someone else's villain, aye? And the other way around. We'll be a hero to those who don't have many of them."
Geist nodded.
"Right," said Araldon, "but we're no longer professionals."
"Why, you get another job?" asked Gorm. "Is this a hobby now?"
"I suppose we didn't really lose our jobs at all," said Caitha. "We are just working pro bono now."
"That's even worse," said Araldon. Geist patted him on the back. "No, my friend, don't try to cheer me up. Look at me, a traveling bard siding with the orcs, working for free. Who would have thought I'd wind up this way?"
"We'll call it progress," said Gorm.
The heroes laughed together as they made their way down the road. The fires of Bloodroot had all but burned out. Hissing coals lingered here and there, glowing orange in the cool twilight, but the smoke was clearing, and the ash had settled. The rats and crows had yet to brave the ruins and partake of their morbid buffet of strewn silver talons. The city was empty. Almost. The ogre's breathing was slow and labored. Blood and ash caked his skin. His eyes were glazed and vacant, much more so than normal. He didn't even look at the figure approaching him.
"Getting old for this stuff,"
Brunt rumbled weakly.
I heard you only fought because it was your job, said the troll.
Was gonna retire 2 weeks,
lamented the ogre. Every word took intense concentration and fortitude, much more so than normal.
But why did you fight with the mercenaries? Why did you help kill all of these orcs?
Asked Thane.
Brunt, fight for justice.
And is this justice?
Brunt said nothing.
Is it?
The troll asked.
No,
whispered the ogre. He closed his eyes, and the fight drained out of him. Thane reached into his pouches.
I didn't steal these, he said. I'm just watching them for my friends, so they don't get misused.
He produced a small amber vial.
I'm like the party healer, if you really think about it. After all, I healed Gorm when I found him in the ditch.
Brunt opened one eye, but said nothing.
The point is that having these potions is a big responsibility, but I don't think the others would mind giving one helping to a good man.
Brunt. Bad.
You were?
Said the troll, unstoppering the vial. The amber liquid sparkled in the twilight as the troll poured it into the prone ogre's mouth.
But you don't have to be.
And he walked away, following the path the heroes had left in the fallen ash. Brunt lay in ponderous silence for a long time. Then he sat up, heaved himself to his feet, and shuffled into the night.